Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 77 of the What the Sheep podcast, where Alana and myself will be discussing, breaking down, and generally freaking out over Critical Role Campaign 3, episode 21, the conclusion of the heist. But before they could conclude said heist, they had to do some battling, a little scuffle with two clay golems. And as Adam has already mentioned in chat, this was a very much, what the fuck, Matt? What's going on? Because it was, it was pretty brutal.
That was pretty rough. I think it was, like, the reaction, the first, like, that's when they first saw how much damage these things could do.
Yeah.
It was, like, the reaction against, was it Lordna? Yeah, she was running away from the chest, and, I think she had 29 hit points and took, like, 23 points of damage in the first hit. Rough. Very rough, but I love those kinds of fights where it's like it's more about keeping away than potentially even fighting the things. oh god, it was scary though.
It was very scary, and it's combats like those where every turn matters, every action matters, which I think like a huge turning point for this fight was pretty early on when, either Imogen or Fern, you know, they kept bouncing between who was playing who, commanded them to grovel, which, like, skips one of their first turns, which is huge. Like, in a fight like this, where they're skip an entire turn. That's huge, 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 huge.
That was, like, and before their turn as well, so they kind of got in without them actually having proper actions. No, that's a really good use of the spell. I love command so much. It has so much potential to like be good. It was great. It was a good fun fight. Despite how kind of despite how kind of terrifying it was, it felt like a fun classic kind of D&D encounter.
I like the survived. Idea. They survive.
Mostly.
I do like the idea of them like being able to grab someone and chuck him at like an ally or something.
That was pretty funny.
That is funny.
That was terrifying though, because then trying to leave the room and then it tried to grab and throw Fern. And then Matt was like, oh, it didn't get a chance to throw her at one of you. I thought it was going to throw her back into the room and, like, keep her trapped with them. That'd be more terrifying. It was a good fight. And they came up with the smart decision to leave. Let's just leave. This is going to be a smarter thing. But that didn't work out either.
No, it was... It was pretty rough because then, they tried to leave, but then they quickly realized that the other group yoinked their little immovable rod and clicked it, you know,
it's
at that
best.
Door, which is
I love
hilarious.
It was like a sense of betrayal from the players to the DM, but it was like such a perfect move from Matt to be like, well, you just left it there and you did it to them. Like, of course they're going to do it. It's, I loved it. I thought that was the funniest thing in the episode.
But what's even funnier is...
Incredulousness.
So I actually, like, again, it's their game. They can play however they want. But, like, I was, like, kind of, like, thrown off when all was said and done. They did the two things, and they were planning on, like, all right, what do we play dead? Do we wait for them to approach? And then when they waited for the other group to get close into the other room, and then they kept reactivating that fire trap on them. I was like, oh my god,
that was so good.
What are y'all do? You're gonna kill them. You're actually gonna kill them.
I was
terrified. I was like, oh no.
Oh man, I've gotten to the age now where, like, 3 years ago, I might have been like, oh my god, they're murdering them. That's, like, outrageous. And now I'm just like, that's fucking awesome. Like, it's so funny. And then just seeing Imogen, like, come to the realization, like, oh, is this, like, actually really bad? Like, is this properly hurting them? No, I thought that was hilarious. Just the action of, like, dink, dink.
Yeah.
Just...
I was like, no, oh my god, they're literally going to kill these people. And they almost did.
They almost did. It would have definitely had a shift in the feel of the episode, I think, if one of the other characters was dead. Yeah. Although I feel like FCG has Revivify at this point. Maybe they could get there quick enough. Mm-hmm. But it definitely would have soured the heist a bit from the character's perspective. From a player perspective, it's like a fun twist.
Yeah.
But no, I thought that was the funniest thing. It was really clever too. It was. Essentially trap them.
Yeah.
That was fun. And Adam's right though. Hydroga lied. Those traps are like deadly.
Yep. And that's why Ashton was like so pissed off. Like in the earlier parts of this episode, he was like, "Yo, this guy was actually out to like kill us."
Yeah.
So really not too into that.
No, I love the fight. I thought it was great. I liked that. I loved all the talks about them playing dead. I kind of wish that had played out because I think that would have been a super funny scene. But I think was it Ashton or was it Orym or someone just said like, "You guys are seriously overestimating your ability to act and improv."
Yeah.
it would have been you know it would have been like a performance or a deception check or something, and it just would not have. It wouldn't have flown.
But it would have been great. It would have been so funny.
It would have been a fun moment. Yeah. And then when they left, like, I was thinking, and then Sam voiced it like, "Oh, what if they're playing dead? What if this is their ruse?"
Yeah.
But no, it was good. It's good fun.
But I also like when they then went into that room to see all, like, the scorch marks and stuff, they're like, "Where'd the other group go?" And, like, Sam or someone was like, "They're Isles of Ash." They're gone.
100%.
They're dead.
Oh, I'd love to know the stats for those statues. Like, was it essentially releasing a fireball, or was it you know, just a certain amount of fire?
I think if it was a fireball, they would be dead. I feel like it's probably just like a burning hands idea.
Yeah, just repeatedly done.
Yeah, three burning hands. So what is that? 96 damage. But obviously, maybe some of them saved and all that stuff. So it's not. That's survivable. At level 5, that is actually, like, survivable.
Yeah.
If you're saving and stuff. So. Yeah. But still not great.
No. I just thought it worked out so well. I just loved the concept of them triggering the trap from a distance. And just the, as Matt described it, the door just having, like, a light orange glow coming out from underneath it. And it's like, oh no. No, it was good. It's like, it was nice for them to use the advantage of them, you know, figuring out which traps were which, like, to their advantage. I liked it. It was good.
Yeah, no, definitely a huge fan of that. I also just, throughout the entirety of this episode, and even in previous episodes when someone can't make it, in this instance it was Ashley, it's always so funny seeing the rest of the cast trying to act as that character, like, using the very soft voice as Fern and, like...
Yeah.
saying the things that she would normally say or doing the things she would normally do. It's always so funny. It's so
And good. I love the Laura essentially like giving up halfway through of doing it too.
Yeah.
She's like, she initially started and then gave up on the voice because it's like, you know, I'm going to go over there and then fucking cure wounds him. Like just couldn't continue that. But then it was, she had to roll. What was the roll for Ashley? There was a role she didn't want to do. Was it the save against being grabbed, maybe?
I think so.
And I remember she's like, I'm not doing this. This is, I'm not going to be responsible for Ashley's character's death. There's a lot of natural 20s.
There was a lot of natural 20s on the behalf of Fern, but also just in general. Yeah. There were a lot of natural
20s. Yeah, clutch moments. A lot of clutch.
Yeah. Because there was, and the thing that I wrote down, for one of the nat 20s was really funny. It was one of Liam's natural 20s as Orym during the fight when he was trying to like maneuver and acrobatics his way like down the hall through different things. It was so funny because Matt was describing like how difficult it was going to be. He's like, "It's going to be tough. It's going to be acrobatics. You got to do all this stuff, move here." And then like as Matt's describing how hard it's going to be, Liam's just like, "Oh, natural 20." I just think that's so funny. It's just like a way to, you know, shut the DM up and be like, hey, I can do it.
He's like, plus? And he's like, plus 8.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, all right, 28. And I like how then Liam continued. He's like, well, with that natural 20, I'm going to roll. Yeah. Like, he just added all the extra really cool flavor stuff to it. Yeah, it's like, this is my free pass. I can do what I want now with this move. No, that's cool. I don't know if I've mentioned it, but I really like Halfling Battle Masters.
It's really cool, actually.
They're cool. And then it's kind of like how Caleb, how Liam played Caleb, how he played the wizard, of just being super descriptive and super detailed with the spell descriptions. We've got Liam now doing the same with the action economy and with their moves and their acrobatics. It's so cool. I know we gushed about a lot in campaign two with like how cool spell descriptions was, but it's the same sort of thing here. It's just really fun to see a martial class described in such a way. And especially like a dex-based fighter, so you are going to get a lot of acrobatics and a lot of kind of quick movements. It's so fun. It's so enjoyable.
Yeah.
You get such a clear picture, I feel like, whenever Aurum's moving. It's like, oh yeah, it makes sense and it looks good. It's one of my favorite things about that character, which is really about the player, I guess. Oh,
of course.
Yeah.
No, but it is nice, as you said, seeing martial classes like this, because I feel like in general, at least from my perspective, like martial classes can be seen as like a bit boring compared to magic classes in terms of like flavor and like presentation, the stuff you can do.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's really cool seeing Aurum pull off all of these really cool things, be very descriptive, and show that they are actually very badass. Like, martial classes are sick.
I was actually having this conversation with my sister-in-law like 2 days ago about martial classes, how sometimes with a martial class, especially if you're playing a fighter and like, God forbid you're playing like a fighter champion or something, it really allows you to focus on the role play and the character and making the character interesting, because it does come down to your turn. Like, it's like, who am I going to hit? Battle Masters obviously affords a lot more creativity because you've got your maneuvers and things like that. But I do like martial classes for that. Like, you don't need to panic during combat. You can just like, I know what I'm going to do. My turn is hitting things. I'm going to just enjoy the scene. I'm going to enjoy the role play. Which some people like that, and I do like that. I like being just like, I'm just gonna hit things as much as I can. I want to get as strong as I can and hit things as hard as I possibly can.
I mean,
horrifying playing a paladin.
When it comes down to, like overall damage done, you know, topping the DPS meters and stuff.
Yeah.
Like martial classes actually like compete pretty heavily against like magic class, if not perform better in terms of like just raw damage.
Yeah.
So I think like in previous campaigns, I think Percy had a lot of damage dealt. Yeah. Grog, Yasha,
all the multi attacks.
Classes, yeah.
All the multi attacks, the action surges, the high damage dice.
Yeah. Because then
chances
to
hit being higher. Yep. Less resistances, that sort of thing. Yeah. Nice.
And
good fun.
You know, the more you roll, the more chances at natural 20s you get, which obviously double your damage dealt. So. Yeah, martial classes, while they are just hitting things, you end up hitting things pretty hard, as it turns out. But not as hard as fire does, you know, when you're repeatedly laying down a trap onto some folks. Not great burning them to a crisp. But burning things to a crisp is familiar.
I knew it.
Burning things to a crisp is familiar to one particular wizard.
I knew it.
Caleb Whittlegast. Let's take a look at some fan art.
What a segue. I fucking knew it.
As soon as you sent me this DM of like, this is my fan art, I'm like, I know exactly how I'm going to put this in. But yes, here is Alana's fan art pick. A wonderful throwback to our favorite hobo wizard, Caleb Whittlegast. Obviously shining through in episode 21 with the fire trap. But this wonderful art done by @EnoDraws on Twitter. We love Caleb. We love Angsty Boy.
I was saying to you, like, I was missing Caleb and I wanted a Caleb Caleb fan art, but this is just so cool. And it has like a good mix, this one, of like the Jorhas outfit, but also the kind of homeless Caleb, transient Caleb. Like, I love Frumpkin's tail. Looks so good.
I know.
Oh. I had the funniest comment on one of my videos the other day, and it was my Caleb would have guessed cat army video. And someone just said, I don't care what Caleb has ever done before this point, he's the cutest wizard in the world and I'm in love with him. Valid. It's very good.
Very, very true.
Good stuff. Lovely art.
Good. Yeah, it is. I love the like the spell, like the strange like morphing that seems to be happening around the spell. We got the dancing lights in the background. It seems like there's like fire also like in the background coming off of him a little bit.
Yeah,
really, really nice. Really nice. Switching over to my pick, I guess. Yeah, we'll just do it now. Why not? Just a nice little candid shot of the party, maybe traveling out of the city. This very cozy, fun art done by @AnnaZ_S on Twitter. We just got the gang hanging out in the field, doing their own thing.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's a really nice piece. And then we have FCG kind of hidden in a bush that Ashton is hanging on.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's a fun little flowers everywhere. A nice...
I love fern.
And I'm a huge fan of traveling. Travel episodes, traveling parts of D&D campaigns. Because it creates for moments like this where everyone's, you know, just chilling, hanging out, resting. Taking a second to, you know, rest those legs and just hang out, talk, vibe. Great. Good vibes all around.
Look how buff Chet is.
Oh, I know.
He is strong.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's cool. That's gorgeous. I like that a lot.
And, you know, we actually do have to, like, speaking of Chetney being buff, old Geezer does have, like, 17, 18 something strength, so he is very strong for an old, an old timer, which I think is just really funny. Yeah,
he's great. It's I don't want to jump ahead, but talking about their level ups, he's got kind of low dex, doesn't he? Or is it?
Am I getting that mixed up? It's reasonable. It's not the high. I think it's like 14, maybe.
14. Yeah. Okay. It's fine. That's reasonable. It's fine. Because dipping his toes into rogue a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Because I thought he was just full blood hunter. But I guess he does have at least a level or two in rogue. I'm guessing it was like, I think it was like two levels rogue and then he went into blood hunter. Maybe.
Maybe
one level rogue and then just the rest blood hunter. I'm not sure.
I don't know enough about the blood. I'm not looking at chat at the moment. I'm sure someone's chatting at me. I don't know enough about blood hunter to know if these things he has is first level or not. I think it might be.
I think Order of the Lycan is level 3.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, he's 5 blood hunter. Okay, so he has one rogue. So I'm guessing his first level is probably rogue, and then... he had magic items to masquerade as one. Or maybe he's taking one level in rogue now.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought he was full Bloodhunter because he appeared as rogue when they first met him, but then it changed to Bloodhunter when he, you know, revealed that he was a Lycan. So I think he was, you know, 5 levels of... Because he has the extra attack, so he has to be 5 levels of rogue.
Yes.
We know things. We know D&D.
Yeah, we're the experts here. Oh, yeah. We're coming to you live with all the... prime knowledge.
They watch to hear people stumbling and rambling about what they maybe know about D&D.
Yep. And then occasionally, sometimes we sprinkle in Therizdun and Ruidus. And
there you
then
go.
We lose 20 viewers. And then it gets put on mute. Anyways, wonderful fan art, as always. Imogen almost killed a whole adventuring party.
It was a group effort. She just pulled the trigger.
yep. But eventually the party does exit the manor. I also do like the idea of the verdict staying around there for a little bit, thinking that the earring is still somewhere in the museum.
Yeah.
But I think after their short rest that they probably had, they probably found out pretty soon after that.
Yeah. Or even then, like, the deception check might not have worked. It could have been like a, that lie sounded good enough for me to maybe believe you, but we're not. It's like, we're done sort of thing. I got the sense that they were pretty fucked up. And didn't want to continue necessarily, or at least definitely didn't want to get into a combat with the Bell's Hells. Which they didn't want either, to be fair.
I was worried that they were going to do that. I was worried that, like, they were going to just jump them and just finish them off. Or at least, like, knock them all unconscious. I don't think they would aim to kill them.
No, I think that would be murder and illegal for the heist.
Yeah. So. Luckily, it didn't come to that.
They stole a lot of stuff, the Bell's Hells.
Like, they did.
I was... Not until the end of the episode were my fears really allayed, but I was, like, nervous the entire time. I was like, they're stealing stuff that he's going to know. Like, there's no way he's not going to, like, put two and two together and, like, think stuff is missing. Who has been in here recently? And the magnitude of things that they were stealing were quite, seemingly at the time, were quite impressive and... rare. You'd think, like, someone that has these items might have the means to track down the people that steal them, but
and what's funny is, so I guess we can talk about the stuff that was stolen. We soon found out in this episode that a lot of the stuff was fake. The beacon was fake, the spear is fake, journal is fake. Based on probably things that are real, but you know, created just for the show. But
what a ripoff.
What a ripoff. Are we surprised? No. Do I love them even more? Yes.
Oh, amazing. They might be my favorite NPC of this campaign so far. The joke they made when they went back out and it's like, well, you've seen too much, like, and you kill them, like, to the guards, and they're like, what the fuck? I love chaotic characters like that. He's spicy and I love him.
He was a good sport too about losing. He's like, well done. I always pay my debts. Like him. He's cool.
It's good. I can see them maybe having to need him maybe some point in the future, of being like, we need someone shady that can, like, have access to some kind of dodgy business dealings, because they seem kind of I don't know, they seem kind of, like, unaffiliated to a degree, and we're now learning about maybe some dodgy things with other people in Drusar. They might be, like, a nice outside party, and they're seemingly, you know, keeping tabs on dodgy deals, so they might end up being an ally. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that'd be nice. But I guess we can also talk about, before we get into the papers, because that was kind of like a big ending point of the episode. But first, Chetney went to the toy shop to meet the other toy maker, and they had a bit of a confrontation, if you will.
It was, like, such a classic kind of standoff, like Clint Eastwood film, sort of, like, reaching for the pockets.
But it was interesting because, like, the other toy maker seemed, like, pretty chill, you know, on the up and up. But as soon as Oldgar was mentioned, like, there definitely seems to be some shady stuff going on in Uthodur with Oldgar. I'm wondering, I actually don't know what to wonder. Like, is Oldgar the reason Chetney became a blood hunter? Or is that just totally separate and Oldgar is just, like, a bastard?
Yeah, because what we've been told was that Chetney... Well, this is what Chetney's told us, and so, you know, it could very well be a lie. Yeah. But Chetney said that they were kicked out of Uthodurn and then in their travels were attacked. Yes. But what we know about Oldgar is that Chetney seemingly did something bad to them on their way out of Uthodurn. Like, or, like, you know, that's what got them kicked out of Uthodurn. They fucked around with Oldgar. So... we don't know if, like, that could have been, like, post-becoming Lycan, that could have been pre-Lycan, it could have been, you know, either they humiliated them or they physically attacked them. We don't know to what degree Oldgar you know, clearly Olga's been around. Olga's been out Margaret and had dealings out there, not good ones from the sounds of things.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to this being a toy maker. Like, what
is the
toy making industry?
Which makes me think, like, maybe it's like a front. Like, and it's actually, you know, something deeper. You know, how, like, you know, laundromats are actually just for money laundering and all that stuff. Maybe toy making is just...
an actual laundromat?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I really liked it because I feel like it was a very vague scene. It's a very intense scene. But it kind of just, it gave us little hints as to like what this Ultgar character is if these two people have very bad blood with Ultgar to the point where they were worried about people like following them in regards to Ultgar.
Yeah.
Or any of that stuff, so.
I'm excited for when we get like maybe a little bit more of a serious Chetney scene. Mm. Because so far anything with their backstory, and again, because it's like talking about toy makers and carpentry and that sort of thing, but whenever we get kind of like little bit of hints about Chetney's backstory, it is quite like it's played off maybe as a bit of a joke, but that could also just be Travis wanting to keep it light.
Yeah.
Travis might be like, oh, you know, I went pretty hard, pretty heavy last campaign. I'd be fine with this character having a fun, and humorous backstory. But I like the drama, and I like the dramatic acting. So I'd love to see, you know, Chetney put in a position where they have to be a little bit real with the partner, which they were this episode. They're always quite honest if someone asks them directly about, hey, what was that about? Like they don't try to hide it. They're like, oh no, here it is. I like chat. People saying, yeah, Ultgar is Santa. I do like that theory.
Pretty much,
as well.
And that's what it's going to be.
The Santa of Uthodan.
No, but it's interesting that you say how Travis wants to maybe keep his backstory or character very lighthearted. Mm. On the flip side of that, Chetney also has the potential to be a very angsty or dramatic character, or have dramatic things happen to them because of the nature of their werewolf form, their lycanthropy. Because we know that when Chetney lost control, they did strike against Aurum. Now imagine if that resulted in someone dying or falling unconscious or something like that. Like, there's a lot of dark, heavy stuff that could happen as a result of Chetney.
So, yeah.
I am here for that. I'm here for that. Sign me up.
They are essentially going rogue werewolf, which is like super edgelord.
Yeah. Just classic, throw in a point of warlock. Just take at least one level of warlock. Make a pact with someone.
Oh my god. Yeah. That's their parents were murdered.
Yeah, probably. But then after all the toy shop shenanigans, they did meet up one last time with Istani, where they learned a bit about a new group known as the Grin Verity.
Grim. Is it Grin or Grim?
Maybe it's Grim. I wrote down Grin. Because that's what the caption said. Maybe it's Grim. Grim sounds better.
I'll check crit roll stats. Grim.
Ah.
Grim Verity, which is like, you know, the dark truth or like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is...
which is cool.
Bit on the nose, but...
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. It's like, it's so funny because like... I just like to imagine a bunch of like old, like scholarly nerds like sitting around like trying to come up with like a cool name. And they come up with like the edgiest, on the nose name.
That's it. Like, I feel like a lot of the names Matt has for his colleges and universities, they're quite like, you know, grand, and he's opened up a thesaurus essentially for university names. Like, but this is just kind of like the dark people, the nighttime truth seekers. Like, We're not bashing about it. It's funny.
No, it's great. It's great. I actually really like the name. The names are really cool.
But they sound fun.
They do. They're all about...
not necessarily evil, just...
No. It seems like a more... So I was getting, like, Cobalt Soul vibes when he was talking about how they uncover, like, conspiracies and stuff. Like, that's part of their whole thing. So I was like, oh, interesting. So it's like a more... maybe less martial... Cobalt Soul, where it's a bit more on the scholarly side into the research,
or even
side.
like a less bureaucratic Cobalt Soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think it's cool. They do have a new individual to reach out to, one Eben Oldekai, who seems to be a member. And we also learned that the twins, the Loomis twins, were actually new members of the Grim Verde. So,
yeah,
interesting stuff.
No, I think it's gonna be a good lead for them to, like, because they're in Eos as well, is it?
So that definitely seems like it's gonna be the next destination at this point. Yeah.
It'd be cool if they took an airship there. I think if they get, like, either some money from Hexham or they get some money from Esteros, they would be able to afford
some 100%.
Airship travels to there, which would be fun, because airship adventures are fun, and, you know.
It would definitely be a lot safer and a lot faster. So we don't have to go through the Hellcatch Valley.
Yeah, like, it would be safer. I'm like, they can get attacked. Amazing.
That would be cool, though. It would be actually be really cool if they got attacked by, like, sky pirates or something.
Yeah, we haven't had skyship travel since the very early campaign one, when they went to Vasselheim the first time. And yeah, they got attacked by wyverns, like pirates.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I'm down for that again.
Yeah, I'd be 100% down for that. But yes, as Alex points out in chat, there is no skyport in Eos, but you don't need a skyport. Just land somewhere.
Parachute.
Just land. Yeah. Or just parachute off, yeah. It's fine.
Oh, and they do have their horses still. So just put parachutes on the horses.
That is correct. Yeah. No parachuting with the horses.
Yeah, it's a normal thing to do.
But surprisingly, the horses lived.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest surprise of all of this.
It's very surprising.
The horses lived. Is this the first time that all of their animals have survived during a trek? Because, I mean, The Moorbounders,
they got rewilded.
They just kind of, they let them go. They let them go free.
Yeah, they were no longer mounts at that point. They were just wild animals.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what happened to the horses that they got from Trostenwald to Zadash. I think survived.
I think they did. However, I feel like at least one of them may have. They're all like toilet names.
Yeah. Did they all survive? Because I don't remember any of them dying, necessarily. They might have gone...
We lost, like, one or two of them, because I remember, I think, Caleb, like, tore one apart with Cat's Ire, I think.
That was in Jorhas somewhere.
Oh, is
that
later?
Was, like, the bugbear's horse.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, what the fuck, Caleb? Like, holy shit.
Yeah. I didn't remember that.
No, they died? They died? Really?
I feel like they did. I just can't remember when.
I still feel like the most egregious use of their horses was in campaign one, like traveling to Whitestone, and they left the horses on a cliff, kept going, and like moments later, they were attacked by harpies.
Yep.
Horses they ditched after Ashanai. Yeah, I know those ones.
Mm-hmm.
All the toilet ones died when they were with a guest player.
Really? Huh.
No.
Guess they're all dead. That's what I figured at the very least.
Oh, that's right. Some burrowing creatures attacked. They got attacked by Enkegs.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That was at a live show.
Ooh, that was real bad. That was
also when Bo almost died.
Ooh.
At a live show. Because it
that was
burrowed underground with bow in its mouth.
No, that's later. That was Remoraz. Yeah, in the north.
Right.
This was, they were traveling, they had met up with Neela and the other Furbolgs, and they had Keg, and the Enkegs attacked, and those horses died from, like, poison damage and, like, acid damage. Like, it was bad.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Rough.
That is correct.
Thank you for reminding me of that, chat.
Yeah. It was good times. Oh, I remember campaign two. That was great.
Remember Caleb for the Caleb picture.
Remember Caleb. Remember this guy. Remember how great this was. I still think about.
Rough.
Oh man. Talking about campaign two now.
Yeah, this is campaign two podcast.
I wish we had gotten more of Caleb's backstory. I still feel like we kind of got cheated out of some really awesome.
You need to read
service
the comic.
Stuff.
You need to read the comic. It's so good. If anyone hasn't read the Mighty Nein Origins Caleb comic, you need to read it. One, like, the majority of it is, like, when Liam spoke with Marisha and Sam, like, they had the just reveal in the hotel room. It's all that word for word, just illustrated, but there's so much more detail and so much more kind of story. You really need to read it. It's so good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'll send it to you.
Oh, that sounds so
good. I won't do that. That's illegal, but, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shut up.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
But back to campaign three. We did get some juicy information from some papers that were stolen from Yvonne's office. So, first things first, we had initials sp.y.sh-n, which translates to Spiraling Shen. Now, a lot of people were talking about how Shen is a name drop from campaign one. However, I don't remember who that is because
I don't think that was the this is where I probably should have done some reading for the podcast. Welcome to the What the Shit podcast, where we know everything.
We know everything. We do the research, so you don't have to.
Spiraling was essentially like the rankings they could get in the clasp, and they were like the spiraling of like. They managed all the secrets and they managed all the kind of goings on for the Imon branch of the class. And they went to spiraling Shen for help when the Chroma Conclave attacked. And so they essentially made a deal with them to, you know, get out of the city.
Mm.
Yes?
Nice.
The guy that wanted into Vasselheim. That guy, what? I don't know what you mean by that, Adam.
Adam knows. Adam's our research guy.
But yeah, they dealt with them during the Chroma Conclave because they had to get in and find a... It was to get a way out of the city or to get to their keep, maybe, I think it was. Because they went from there to Whitestone. They traveled to Whitestone after the Chroma Conclave attack. Yeah. Yeah, he had a monocle. Yeah.
So he's all. So he was all about corruption and shady shit. So if he's in, league with Yvonne Hytroga, maybe Yvonne isn't as great of a, dude.
Well, it's weird because the class they were definitely sus and dodgy, and they were very much about, you know, disrupt. Well, not even so much disrupting power. It was like allowing their power to flow within the means of, within the means of the city. And they, you know, wanted to expand. I think they, in the Wildmount Gather, talk about how the class have been trying to expand to Wildmount for so long. Yeah, so, you know, they're kind of... It's interesting to think that this guy's still alive, because I think they were... I'm looking at it now. It doesn't appear... Oh, human. They were human. So they'd be getting on a bit now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though. That's cool that there's all these different connections, familiar campaigns and stuff. We don't know what the Y means yet. Probably irrelevant.
Could be the first name.
Yeah, that's probably
Spiraling Y Shen. Do we? What was the contents of the letter? Did we get that information?
It was yes. I think it was just different trades that were happening.
Right. Yeah, right.
Different like exchanges of items and stuff, and then just the initials were like the constant
on the letters. Between Yvonne and dealers from around the world.
Yep. Because we did get some of the papers talked about the commissions, like the fake commissions of the fake beacon, the fake spear. So we got that stuff. But the really juicy stuff was some sneaky information on one Gianna Hexum. Mm.
Ooh.
Which was super spicy. What is she up to? Some super spicy stuff. Apparently she's been handling some illegal smuggling of some strange crates that Ashton and the Nobodies did come across. But things got weird after they came across it.
It's either there's something something within the crate that causes something to have Ashton, or it's as a result of their memory loss that they can't quite remember what was in the crate. Or there's some kind, that sounds like real dodgy to me. That seems like you know, it's almost like what FCG has, like, there's this barrier. What if, like, Ashen has, like, a magical barrier in their memory preventing them from remembering what was in these crates?
Yeah.
When they first mentioned the crates, I was thinking maybe it was, like, the Broomstone, and she was involved.
That, yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. With that. But it makes it seem a little bit more, I don't know, what's the word? Evil. The fact that it fucked with Ashen so much. Mm-hmm. So I think it still could be good if it was the Broomstone and she was just involved with the mother and she's like, you know, she's the middleman, like passing it off through Estros and all that sort of thing. But
yeah,
I'm wondering what else it could possibly be. Like, what other kind of
weird, I don't know. It could be totally separate.
Anything do we know?
Man. Because now it also raises the question, will Gianna actually let Ashton go? Or is she just banking on the fact that he just doesn't remember or won't remember what they came across? Maybe
all things considered,
modify memory.
Yeah.
Maybe.
All things considered, I wouldn't class Ashton as, like, you know, sounds really rude, but like a high-end mercenary, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine her being like, no, I need you. Unless there's like some other ulterior motive than just him being a hire for her. So, I'm worried about them going back to her because she seemed quite like, oh, she's the kooky kind of rich lady. Like, you know, she's kind of cool and, she gets it sort of thing while still being really rich and out of touch. But I'm worried now because it seems quite, a bit dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't
think the party will reveal that they know this information because they know the position of power that she holds. But they will probably definitely pass off the idea that Yvonne is a fake, a fraud, and they have dealings with members of the Clasp as a way to, like, I don't know, get the upper hand on Yvonne and that stuff.
It could also be, like, I mean, Yvonne was clearly spying on Gianna Hexham. Yeah. It could be, like, a completely legal, normal deal, this thing that she's doing, having these boxes, and it's just, we're just picturing it as bad because it was something that was spied upon and worthy of noting down. It could literally just be, you know, regular deliveries. But
and we know how dramatic Yvonne is, so... Yeah. It could, you're right. It could be something totally above board, and Ashton's memory loss surrounding it is just a, you know, happened because of the injury that they suffered.
That being said, I don't think that's the case.
True. That is also fair.
It's too much of a, I've got no words tonight. It's too much tonight. It's 9 a.m. Oh my God. It's too much of a hook. For Ashton and for their backstory, for it to not be nothing. Yeah.
I've speaking of, like, hooks for, like, backstory stuff, like, I really like how these backstory hooks are, like, sprinkled in, like, just seemingly randomly, not really randomly, but it's nice that we get these, like, ooh, now there's, it keeps interested in these characters' backstories. It keeps, like, the party engaged that, It doesn't matter what path they take. There's still going to be these little sprinkles of their backstory for them to follow. So I really like how Matt is kind of weaving in characters' backstories within all of these different things that they're doing. It makes the story flow very well and feel natural. I've been really digging it.
That's good.
Really, it's
been
nice.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. But it seems like the next stop's going to be Eos. And I really hope they take a skyship because that sounds badass. And I mean, they have Estroses, and I feel like Gianna could probably commission, you know, a skyship to take them to Eos as well if they wanted to do that. But is it going to be nice to see Estros again? I feel like it's been a long time.
I hope they check in with I can't remember her name, but like the whole mother situation and the NPC they arrested.
It has been a while since they've really been in town. I wonder if things have, like, settled or if things have gotten worse. what's been going on since the aftermath of the party. Because they kind of left pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. That was wild. That was wild. But, yeah, I'm interested to see, like, what's going on with that? Like, has there been any more arrests? Like, because they had Armand Treshy kind of, you know, dead to rights a little bit.
Yeah, and especially with capturing Lady Emoth. Yeah. You know, they have a lot going for them.
Yeah. No, I'm keen. I'm keen for them to not spend another 20 episodes in Drusar, but like, I reckon next episode might just be all Drusar getting ready to leave, go somewhere else.
A nice intermission episode. They also just leveled up. Level 6.
Level 6.
That's a big level, not so big for spellcast. Well, I think it's mainly, I think level 6 is mainly like a subclass level. Like a
it
lot
is.
Of subclasses get stuff at level 6.
It is. They might get a couple of the spell classes. Casters get like an extra spell slot. Mm-hmm. We can go through them if you like, have a bit of a bit of a chat about what they get. We don't know for Ashton or FCG because we don't have the information on their subclasses to look at necessarily, but we've got a little bit. Oh, we've got a little bit for some of them. So we know that Mr. Chetney is taking a level in, what is it, rogue?
Eventually rogue, yeah.
First level, yeah. So, you know, all the fun stuff. Expertise.
Yeah.
Sneak attack. Yeah, so that's gonna be a fun kind of addition to their repertoire of attacks and hiding their invisibility and all that. That's it's gonna be quite dangerous. Chetney's still undecided. Oh, did we not actually get a roll from Chetney? Did they roll?
Yeah,
they
rolled for HP, and then Travis said he's gonna roll for both Rogue and Blood Hunter, and then decide.
And then decide. Yeah, yeah, right. Gotcha. For our sorcerers, we have extra spell slots. Nothing else. Like they know an extra spell, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What do we have? We have Imogen. That's the character's name.
Yep.
Aberrant Mind. At 6th level, she gets 2 features. So she gets Psionic Sorcery. Ooh. When you cast any spell of 1st level or higher from your Psionic Spells features, you can cast it by expending a spell slot as normal or by spending a number of sorcery points equal to the spell's level. If you cast a spell using sorcery points, it requires no verbal or somatic components, and it requires no material components unless they are consumed by the spell. That's handy. So if she's out of spell slots and she still has sorcery points, she can still cast, essentially. And then she also gets psychic defenses. She gains resistance to psychic damage, and she has advantage on saving throws against being charmed or frightened.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah. And then Lordna, she's only level 4 sorcerer, I think, right?
Yeah, so
level
she's 6, got two that levels. Feet or ability.
Yeah, ASI. Yeah. And yeah, nothing else really changed. She learns an extra spell. That's it for the sorcerers. Aurum's easy, that's ASI or feat. Nothing super exciting for the fighter in that one. Druid, what do we have? We have the Wildfire Druid. I should have had these ready to go. I'm here, it's all good, we got this. Oh, yeah. So it creates the enhanced bond with her wildfire spirit. It says the bond with your wildfire spirit enhances your destructive and restorative spells. When you cast a spell that deals fire damage or restores hit points while your wildfire spirit is summoned, roll a d8 and you gain a bonus equal to the number rolled to one damage or healing roll of that spell. In addition, when you cast a spell with a range other than self, the spell can originate from your wildfire spirit, which I think is the coolest part of that.
That is really cool.
It essentially gives you another point of attack from there.
Yeah.
And I don't think anything changes with the wildfire spirit, and no new spells either. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, so
it gives Mister a little bit more versatility.
A decent power spike for some classes, then just, you know, with the feats and stuff, just helps round out some of the weaknesses that your class might have. So
that's all of them, right? Apart from like FCG, and I think they get another channel divinity FCG, maybe. Yeah, they get two channel divinities. Mm-hmm. No new spells, anything like that, and then barbarian. Yeah, it's class features.
I'm definitely super intrigued on what kind of new features that FCG and Ash are going to have, because they're both those subclasses are so cool. Fundamental Chaos and Empathy Domain are there's so much potential for really cool features for those classes. So I'm really excited to see if maybe Ashen stuff, like there's more stuff that goes on with Rage, or maybe if there's something else that they get.
Yeah. If you look at like the other kind of barbarian subclasses, that's kind of what you get around that point. I think nothing else changes. Or like if Ashen gets an extra Rage, that's kind of it. But yeah, most of it is like, you know, just your power increases to some extent at level 6. You get something cool, something new and cool with your Rage. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like that. Yeah.
Oh man. Now I just want them to get into combat again so we can see what kind of stuff they might actually get. Because it seems like also with like FCG stuff, it seems like some of their features and stuff are about, you know, like protecting, you know, the classic clerical stuff, but
yeah,
I like the idea of like bonding with other members of the party to enhance them or to take some of their damage. Yeah. So more of that like flavorful stuff for the Empathy Domain is really exciting to see. So great. As always, Matt's knocking out of the park with these custom classes to really make them
fun, yeah,
feel good with what their theme is.
I just want to read them. I just want to see.
I know. When are we going to get the Marquette campaign guide?
Oh, wow.
It'll be out now.
I get the sense that like they're going to hold on to it for quite a while because they don't necessarily want to keep it a surprise, but like I'm desperate to see it.
Oh, yeah, because that could be, like, reveal how Ashen became or went on this path.
Yeah.
Because maybe not even Taliesin knows.
That's a good point. Yeah. Imagine if like they don't actually know. I'm sure that's not the case. But imagine if like they don't actually know the features they're getting, and Matt just kind of slips it down. Like, oh, this isn't something new you can do. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. But there it is. The party makes their way back to Drusar. Hopefully, we can talk with Uncle Escheros again. It's been a long time. And maybe Ash can finally be free from their debt from Gianna Hexum. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of shady stuff going on there still. So definitely really excited to see where everything goes. But is there anything else we wish to talk about with this episode? I don't think so.
It was pretty like... not basic, but like it was, you know, combat and then some little tidbits. There wasn't anything major that happened.
Just a nice conclusion to like a nice little side quest they've been on.
I'm enjoying these 4-hour episodes quite a bit.
Yeah
Although this one was more like, you know, 4.5 or 3.5. Just makes it so much easier. Like it's obviously we want more, but like on a Friday afternoon it's nice when it's only like 3.5-4 hours. And we've got a break next week, so that is true.
We got a Red Nose Day. We're bringing back some of the CR2 campaign 2 characters with Stephen Colbert, so that'll be interesting.
Bo, Yasha, and Not, because they're level 5, which is going to be fun.
it's like a flashback.
Yeah, it's like they're being down, essentially.
Ah, okay.
I'm trying to think, actually. Yeah. Level 5 for monks. Do they have Stunning Strike at that point? I think they do, right?
I believe that is when they get Stunning
Strike. Level 5. Look at that. Uh-oh.
How unfortunate. How unfortunate.
How unfortunate.
For the DM. But yeah, looking forward to that. It's always fun when they can get like some really cool guests and stuff. So
yeah,
it'll be fun. But yeah, no Critical Role Campaign 3 next week. It'll be returning the following week. What is that? We're in May already.
It'll be the 5th of May.
May 5th. Oh, jeez. Time is weird soup, everyone. But we already knew this.
Hang on.
It's crazy. But I suppose with all that being said, we can go ahead and call this one a wrap. So as always, everyone, Thank you all so much for joining us this episode. Thank you to everyone who participated in the YouTube live chat. And thank you to everyone who's going to be watching this and supporting us on the upload and listening to on Anchor or Spotify or wherever else this podcast may find itself. If you are looking to support us further, be sure to follow us on Twitter, at WhatTheSheepPod on Twitter. You can follow us there where we post updates on when we're going live, when we have to skip a week, and all that fun stuff. So be sure to give us a follow if you want to stay up to date on when we go live. As always, don't forget to love each other. Spread the love to everyone you meet, everyone you see. But most importantly, do not forget to love yourself. That is the most important thing you can do. So make sure you're taking care of yourself. Drink some water, eat some food, get plenty of rest. Proud of you. Thank you for being here. And so, I hope you all have an absolutely wonderful rest of your morning, day, evening, wherever you may be on this glorious earth. And we'll see you all very soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
I would just like to take a second to give a huge shout out to all of my amazing Patreon supporters. Thank you to all of my expositors, Leah, Olivia, Sean, Pseudonym, The DM's Den, and Hannah. Thank you to all of my archivists, Annika, Daniel, Elliot, Emerson, Melissa, Noelle, John, Linnea, and Matt. And thank you to all of my high curators, Adam, Caleb, IMI, Andrea, Dustin, Rin, and Sylvia. Thank you all so very much for supporting me on Patreon. It truly does mean a lot to me. I hope you all have an absolutely wonderful rest of your day. Stay awesome, and I'll see you all in the next one.